From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Corder Madera.
Pleasant Hill.
Inner Richmond in San Francisco.
Montclair in Oakland.
With just a week left until the election, we check in with the Bay Area's Korean American community about what's important to them.
Those who were born after the Second World War, World War II, they tend to be more conservative, so they like to go with the old-fashioned way.
Then we'll drop in on a contentious Oakland City Council race.
We owe the city all the city employees, we owe them an apology, but we don't owe them the city.
And we meet the most committed candidates you've probably never heard of.
I just sort of thought, like, everybody with an axe to grind was gonna, like, be doing their thing. And in the Bay Area, no less. I'm really shocked.
You'll be well represented today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. To start today's show, we conclude our series in partnership with New America Media, delving into the issues California's ethnic voters care most about this year. California is home to 451,000 Korean Americans. The biggest community is in L.A., but a sizable number are here in the Bay Area, with the highest concentrations in Santa Clara and Alameda counties. So what's this community talking about 1 week ahead of the elections? I spoke with Won Yi, columnist at Hanmi Korean Radio.
More than majority of baby boomers, those who were born after the Second World War, World War II, they tend to be more conservative, so they like to go with the old-fashioned way. So maybe they might support the Republicans. But as far as I'm concerned, it is my opinion, though, that the majority of Korean Americans, they tend to vote for the Democrats.
Now.
Yes.
And what are Korean American community leaders saying about the current level of political engagement of the Korean community? Does a lot of the Korean community here vote?
That's an excellent question. At this time, I would say that they're not heavily involved. That's one thing that we need to make improvement, because Koreans like one step back. Although they have a strong kind of opinion on their own, in their heart, inside, usually they don't expose it. They keep it to themselves. But their second generations, their descendants, their kids are very much involved into the politics.
So that's a change from kind of the fathers to the sons, the mothers to the daughters, a change in one generation. And you're saying it's kind of a cultural thing to keep your opinions to yourself.
Right, yes. Like they have that kind of attitude that, you know what, stay cool, just, you know, don't talk too much. Okay, that's not good for you. But now, once they move in here, that they have a totally under different circumstances, and also they have language barriers, you know, for the time being. So they like to have their second generation have, they put so much emphasis in sacrificing their lives for the second generations. So send good schools, good education, and then they want them to be into the mainstream. And that's their goals and approaches.
So, Juan, let me present you with this. There was a field poll conducted mid-September, this past September, and it showed that Korean Americans were split almost through the middle in their support of Romney versus Obama, but 46% for Obama, 48% for Romney. What do you make of that number?
The fact of the matter is that how many registered voters you have and how many voters actually participating into the voting. From that sense, I think that ratio would change a lot. The fact of the matter is that the old generation tend to vote for Romney, because he mentioned certain kind of strong action against North Korea and this and that. But the people who were educated here, not all in the case, but most of them might go for Obama.
What issues is the Korean community who is voting, what issues is the community following this election year locally here in the Bay Area?
I would say that more than half of Koreans, they are engaged in self-owned businesses, mostly in service sector. It means that they are more kind of tied to the economic matters and then political matters.
California Assemblywoman Mary Hayashi and San Francisco Supervisor Jane Kim are both Korean. Are they mobilizing and encouraging Korean Americans to get out and vote, to just be politically engaged? And what does it mean for the Korean community to have those two people elected?
First, we are very proud of their Korean descendancy, Mary Hayashi and Jane Kim. But whether it's Mary or it's Jane, regardless that the Koreans, we are here one of the multi-ethnic groups in San Francisco Bay. So before we are Korean, we are kind of people here, living here. So, you know, we try not to kind of, you're Korean, so we support you 100%. I don't think that's the case. At the same time, the numbers of voters amongst the Korean community are very much limited, as I mentioned. So I think like Jane Kim, she's going for the mainstream. And she does so much work for the multicultural residents in her district.
So you have a weekly column on Hanmi Radio. What are some of the recent topics you've discussed, like last Friday and the Friday before that?
Try to stay away from politics.
Away from politics.
I just like to deliver the facts that the current the political situation we are in. So what I'm saying is that get out, vote. That's the main message, okay? How much you are making noise doesn't matter. You have to connect it, move it and translate it into action, participation into voting.
What are you going to talk about next Friday on your column after the election is over?
I'd like to say that, you know, since we are here in USA, I mean United States, we enjoy this life here. But also we have to make a contribution, okay? When I saw some advertising on New York Times by Jewish group, they say, when they are not the Jewish, that really makes Jewish stand out. Okay, you insist upon your way alone, then people stay away from you, and you will lose your value. Same kind of principle applies to Korean-American communities here, any multicultural communities here. Because when you insist upon my way or highway, that's not the right way to do it. So when you really contribute, not only for the Koreans, but for general public, the older people here in this society, that we would create some kind of mutual values that everybody can share with. I mean, that's the thing I like to mention to our people.
That's Won Yi, columnist at Hanmi Korean Radio. So what issues will you be talking about this week? Call our feedback line at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Leave us a message and you may hear yourself on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. We turn our attention now to Oakland, where three incumbents are leaving their city council seats, including District 1's council member, Jane Bruner. District 1 is basically North Oakland, separated by the 24 freeway that divides the more upscale neighborhoods of Temescal and Rockridge from the historically lower-income neighborhoods to the west. Both Oaklands come together at the corner of Alcatraz and San Pablo Avenue, just shy of the Berkeley border. On one side of the street, Actual Cafe is buzzing with customers stirring organic milk into their fair trade coffee. A hip new burger place is in the works next door. But you don't need to look far to see the other North Oakland. Across the street, outside the St. Columbus Catholic Church, white crosses stand among rose bushes, memorializing Oakland's 106 homicide victims this year. Rising crime, it's up 20% this year is the big issue for District 1 City Council candidates who are vying for Jane Bruner's seat. She served the district for 16 years, but is giving up the spot to run for city attorney. She's leaving behind the problem of Oakland's understaffed police force. The consensus is that the city needs more police officers. Right now, it has about 630. But with Oakland's officers among the best compensated in the nation and all other city services slashed pretty much to the bone, it's not clear how the city can afford the cops it needs. The candidates for District 1 have some ideas, though. Reporter Charlie Mintz has these profiles of the seven candidates who are running.
First up, we have Amy Lemley, founder of First Place for Youth. It's a nonprofit devoted to helping foster kids become independent.
We are a city that needs much more revenue to do all the things we want to do, including to provide our residents a baseline level of public safety, which we totally are not doing right now. I think the challenge is people think about these master developments like Coliseum City, but there are projects today that are dying on the vine. A grocery store at 30th and Broadway. Let's get that going. Let's get it built. Let's get that money. Secondly, I truly believe that this emphasis on economic development and beginning to see projects through is something that can begin to bear fruit shortly. When I met a young person, these are the throes of chemical dependency, homeless, prostituting. Like, they got here because of a lifetime of neglect. We have to have patience, and we have to be willing to work with this young person and have a little faith in them. And I think the analogy stands for Oakland. You know, the solution is not right around the corner. But we have to believe there's something good about Oakland, something we can draw on to solve this problem.
That's Amy Lemley. The master developments she mentioned are huge projects that relied on millions of dollars of redevelopment money, which was a property tax the city siphoned away from the county. When Governor Brown ended redevelopment, Oakland had to reckon with a $26 million hole in its budget. The city ended up laying off dozens of workers. That's a situation District 1 council candidate Richard Raya says he has the experience to avoid.
You probably know I was the budget director for the Alameda County Public Health Department. We had revenues dropping from the state and the federal government, and I was in charge of a $120 million budget with 600 staff. And we knew that we were going to be facing some major shortfalls in the upcoming years. So we started to set aside money wherever we could to basically freeze vacancies, not fill positions that were vacant. And we ended up setting aside $6 million 3 years in a row. And we turned around and used that money to prevent layoffs. We also used that money to maintain services. We need to build on the fact that we've got $11 million in new revenue this year. But we need to build on what's working. And something is definitely working in Oakland. The New York Times said we're the fifth best place to visit, right?
Richard Rye is right. The Times slotted Oakland right between London and Tokyo on the visitability scale. But when it comes to crime, those two cities have rates of gun violence fractions of Oakland's. One of Oakland's responses to its persistent crime has been the formation of neighborhood crime prevention councils, which are kind of like sophisticated neighborhood watch groups. They're an important component of community policing, and they started here in North Oakland.
My name's Don Link. I'm candidate for District 1, North Oakland. I've been very active in District 1, starting really in the neighborhood level, the neighborhood we're sitting in right now, neighborhood watch, and that led to working on community policing and creating Oakland's first Neighborhood Crime Prevention Council in 1994. That, in turn, led to my appointment to the Community Policing Advisory Board when it was formed in 1997. 2 years later, Jerry Brown made me chair of that, and I was chair for 9 years. I've learned to navigate Oakland government pretty effectively, feel very comfortable with it, worked with all the council members on one thing or another, so that the idea of being on the city council wasn't like visiting a foreign planet. It was really like completing what I've been doing anyway.
Don Link has some of the most experience in local government of all the council candidates. Craig Brandt, on the other hand, has some of the least. The lawyer says he isn't much of a politician, but he has a couple specific proposals for hiring more cops and bringing more business to Oakland.
Basically, I have two girls that are 11 and 13, and I got worried about their future. And I thought, okay, I can worry about it and do nothing, or I can worry about it and try and get engaged. So I decided, well, okay, here we go. And in some respects, I'm probably the worst politician of the bunch. But I will say what I believe, and I try to come up with very specific programs. I have two things I'm pushing right now. Crime is a big deal. So the thing I'm pushing is an $80 parcel tax for 4 years as an emergency situation that we're facing to hire more police officers. That money be dedicated just for that purpose. The other thing I want to do is I want to give a small tax cut to new businesses that come to Oakland. Take the first $100,000 of gross receipts for any new business and say, okay, no tax on that for the first year. Just come to Oakland, try us for 1 year, and you know, if it works, great.
Many Oakland citizens agree with Craig Brandt that more police officers are needed. But many also say the city should find other forms of crime prevention. Measure Y is a good example of this. When the city passed the parcel tax in 2004, it devoted half the $20 million in annual revenue to hiring more police officers and roughly a quarter to nonprofit violence prevention programs. One method these groups employ is called restorative justice, which focuses on non-punitive solutions to crime. It's gained a strong foothold in Oakland, but District 1 Council candidate Don McClay says not strong enough.
My top priority is pretty much shared with every Green candidate in Oakland right now, and that's facing the crisis that's facing Oakland youth. We should stop putting people into the criminal justice system, and we should have a triage down at the Oakland Police Department before we refer somebody to the county. Every last case should be reviewed and see if there is some restorative way that we could deal with this case, defer prosecution, and actually get the person in the community making restitution in a positive manner. For every one of those that we succeed at, we have prevented a large amount of crime. I really believe that a lot of civilians need to be hired. We are never going to get officers through the police academy fast enough. So we want to have problem-solving officers. They could be civilians. You know, people who go door to door and investigate after a murder could be a civilian. We should have civilians in there doing this triage I'm talking about as to whether or not we're actually going to prosecute somebody. Right now, it's nobody's job.
That's City Council candidate Don McClay. Oakland's crime problem is serious, but so is the city's potential for economic growth. It's becoming a hub for the clean tech industry, hosting companies like Sungevity, a solar panel manufacturer. Dan Kolb says that's just the beginning.
I spent the last 9 years working as the policy director for the Union of Concerned Scientists here in California. And I've had really over a decade of experience working on clean tech issues. For example, electricity policy. It's one of the most complicated, intricate areas of public policy in the entire state. Clean energy, electricity. I've worked on that issue for over a decade. I've worked with the folks at the PUC, legislators, experts, engineers, academics. You know, I understand the issues, and they know I understand those issues. So if I go out there and say, listen, I want to bring more solar company, they're going to say, oh, well, Dan knows what he's talking about. Okay, let's listen to what I have to say. Oakland is a logical place to have more clean tech businesses, whether it's light manufacturing or office space or whatever. I want to do things that are good for the environment and things that will stimulate economic activity, provide public health benefits, and create jobs, and really be a nationally recognized clean tech hub.
Even if Oakland becomes a clean tech hub, like Dan Kolb hopes, it will still have to deal with the problem of its massive debt. Mayor Kwan touted the city's balanced budget this year, but soon, balancing that budget will be much harder. The city owes almost $2 billion in pension and health care contributions alone, and it's got another $2.5 billion or so in deferred repair of streets and sewers. Of all the candidates running for District 1, Len Raphael is the most outspoken about this issue.
Look, the only reason I got into this fiscal stuff with city is that every time I tried to figure out why we didn't have enough money for enough police and why we didn't have effective anti-violence programs, I was told there wasn't enough money for it. There's no way you can outgrow the cost of adding more police when they're $200,000 a year. I would say you don't pay them $200,000 a year. All new city employees have to be paid substantially less than what they're getting now. We can't gut city services to the point where we cut into the marrow of the very services that the city has to provide. And we'll have to do that in order to pay these retirement benefits. We owe the city all the city employees, including police, including fire. We owe them an apology, but we don't owe them the city. Imagine Oakland with low crime and great schools. We actually can have that. It will take some painful political decisions, but it's absolutely achievable.
That's Lynn Raphael, who is running for the District 1 council seat in Oakland. Four of those seats are up for grabs this year. That means nearly half the city council is being replaced. All those candidates are promising to help Oakland turn a corner. The direction it turns, that's going to depend on who gets elected to represent District 1. In Oakland, I'm Charlie Mintz for Cross Currents.
You can hear longer versions of all our interviews with the candidates for Oakland's District 1 City Council seat online at KALW.org. Another issue that's causing conflict among Oakland residents in District 1 is the expansion of the Safeway store on College Avenue. Listener Sarah Hartley emailed us that some residents aren't so happy about the store expanding by 26,000 square feet to include retail and commercial space. While supporters of the bigger Safeway believe the expansion will offer more employment in Oakland and a more functional space, opponents worry about traffic jams in an already congested area. Well, you can send us your neighborhood concerns, post on our Facebook page. It's KALW News. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. No matter which races matter to you, if you've got a mailbox, chances are that at this point in the election season, it's stuffed with campaign literature. You might be so sick of it that you're considering writing in your own candidate on election day. It's a whimsical way to show dissatisfaction with the candidates who are running.
I always thought that they kept a record of all the write-in candidates, those that were legible that they could see. You know, all you have to do is write it in. You could write in Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Gyro Gearloose, whoever you wanted, and the poor folks down at the Department of Elections would dutifully copy that name down and add the number one after it. Turns out that's not the case, at least not here in San Francisco.
That's Bud Ryerson, and he's one of several local write-in candidates who want your vote next Tuesday. Reporter Lila Cruz-Pless introduces us.
Bud Ryerson is in his 50s. He's got rectangular glasses, longish gray hair, and a warm smile. He lives in Bernal Heights and is running as a write-in candidate for a supervisor seat in District 9.
Are you guys voters in District 9? Would you consider writing in my name for supervisor?
How would you have voted on the Magrini issue?
I would have voted with the Ethics Commission and not reinstate him as sheriff, to remove him as sheriff.
Sheriff. You've got my vote then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ryerson has one issue.
My campaign is a referendum on the vote that David Campos made to reinstate Sheriff Mercurimi. I see that vote as enabling domestic abuse. And I don't think the residents of the San Francisco can tolerate that.
The rules for write-ins depend on the type of election. Want to be a write-in presidential candidate? You have to get on the ballot in every state. To run for state offices, write-ins have to start in the June primaries. And in local races, someone like Bud Ryerson needs to make sure he does all of the right paperwork. Dave McDonald is the Registrar of Voters across the bay in Alameda County, where the write-in process is the same as in San Francisco. He says the first step is...
You file a declaration of candidacy.
They drop like 200 pages of written material on me that I had to read, and forms that I had to fill out, and pledges that I had to take, and oaths that I had to swear to.
That's Ryerson again.
You have to gather generally some number of signatures, and it varies by office.
I filled out some more forms, and they gave me petitions that I had, because I had to collect at least 20 signatures to qualify as a write-in candidate.
And they don't have to pay a filing fee.
So I took the petition forms, and people were surprisingly happy to help me with my candidacy. You know, they understood they didn't have to vote for me, but what they were doing was they were just furthering the democratic process.
It's tough for a write-in candidate to get enough votes to win, so we don't really see too many write-in candidates, but certainly every election we have a few.
Those filing fees can be pretty substantial, up to $1,000 in some cases. But because the write-in statements aren't included in the sample ballot and their names aren't printed, the fee is waived. Write-ins also get a free webpage on the site smartvoter.org. Still, being a write-in is an uphill slog, so what's the point? Well, it gets back to what Ryerson was saying earlier about the democratic process.
I hated the idea of not voting.
Meet another write-in, Sonia Trouse. She's 30, a middle school math teacher in El Cerrito, and she's running for BART board in District 7. Didn't know that was an elected position? Neither did Trouse. Until she looked for the candidate promising lower BART fares and didn't find one.
I hate not voting in these tiny elections because no one votes in them. It's like so much more worthwhile than the big elections. And I want to vote for what I want.
Candidates for the BART board don't need signatures to qualify as a write-in candidate. Trouse says the whole filing process took her about half an hour.
The form, you know, that said, I, Sonia Trouse, I'm running, they printed it out on this paper that's like made to look like parchment, which I thought was really, really charming.
Unlike most politicians these days, Ryerson and Trouse have not been big spenders. Ryerson has spent about $60, almost half of that going to DVDs of David Campos's speech, voting to reinstate Mercurimi.
I was advised to get my message into Spanish and Chinese. So I put it in Google, and it came out in Chinese. And I kind of doped it out and understand what some of the characters mean. And it might be close, but I need somebody to kind of spell check it for me, give it the test before I actually start putting up posters in Chinese that I don't know what they say.
Truss has also spent about $60, mostly on paper and printer ink.
Do you live around here? I'm running for board of directors for BART for District 7 on the lower BART fares platform.
Handing out flyers at Ashby BART, Truss seems surprised that there weren't more write-in candidates.
The thing is, running a write-in candidate is basically free except for promotion, and promotion is cheaper and cheaper with the internet. Like, I'm really surprised. Like, why isn't, like, the Bradley Manning people? Why isn't there, like, a Bradley Manning, like, free Bradley Manning write-in candidate? Like, I just sort of thought, like, everybody with an axe to grind was gonna, like, be doing their thing. And in the Bay Area, no less. I'm really shocked.
Later, Trouse says she doesn't think that people know that being a write-in is even an option, but that it could be used as a valuable political tool.
You can turn any election into a referendum. If you have a one-issue candidate, then everybody that votes for that candidate, it's really clear. Like, look at this. 3,000 people believe this thing.
So while neither write-in candidate thinks they have much of a shot of winning, they're voting for something they believe in and hoping to give you that chance, too. For Cross Currents, I'm Lila Cruz Plus.
Are you running as a write-in? Make your campaign pitch on our Facebook page, KALW News. And here's a quick message from Alameda County Registrar of Voters, Dave McDonald.
We are really looking for Chinese, especially Chinese-speaking poll workers and poll workers that are bilingual in Tagalog. So anybody who wants to work the polls, you can make some money, serve your community, so give us a call.
That number is 510-272-6971. We'll also have it on the web at kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. The Bay Area's write-in candidates could create some unusual situations come Election Day. Another unusual race is the 15th Congressional District. It covers much of Alameda County and parts of Contra Costa, and for the past 39 years, it's been represented in the U.S. House of Representatives by 81-year-old Pete Stark. He's gone mostly unchallenged until this year. Eric Swalwell, a member of the Dublin City Council, is running against Stark, and Swalwell is quite a contrast. He's 31 years old, a soccer coach, and a prosecutor. He's also a Democrat.
which makes this race Democrat versus Democrat. This is the first time that two candidates from the same party can run for the same seat, a reform made possible by voters back in 2010. So what kind of support does Swalwell have, and is there a chance to beat Pete Stark after all these years? To find answers, I started off at a Democratic campaign office in the city of Newark. About 10 people are on the phones in a large room where the walls are plastered with Democratic candidate posters, including that of Pete Stark's. There's no Eric Swalwell sign anywhere, and the campaign callers are asking people to vote for the incumbent.
So, again, in sum, when you do make it to the polls, we'd very much like your support for the Democratic slate for Congressman Pete Stark, Bill Cork for Assembly, and Supervisor Richard
That's
Ryan.
Phone volunteer Sean Manalo leaving a voicemail. I ask him what responses he's gotten from people he's called.
It's been really mixed, actually. I know that there are a lot of big fans of Pete Stark, at least in Fremont, and then I've also had experiences where people are Swalwell all the way, and they've actually have some really nasty things about to say about Pete Stark. So it's kind of unfortunate, but it keeps the race even more interesting.
Today, 20th California District Assemblyman Bob Wykowski's here to greet the phone volunteers, and I ask him why the Democratic endorsement has gone to Stark.
We're in a strange new world in politics because this is the first election cycle that we have the top two contenders. We have a central committee in Alameda County that has elected representatives. So they have a pretty strict procedure where they go through and they interview folks, and then it's an all-day voting to see who gets the endorsement.
Wykowski's not surprised the party stuck with Stark.
This is a rather liberal area, and Pete Stark has been the grandfather of Medicare and Social Security. He's served on the Ways and Means Committee with distinction, and he's been that anti-war vote. We feel an obligation within the party to return him back, one, because of his seniority, but also because of that consistent vote that is reflective of our values.
No surprise, Eric Swalwell isn't at the call center. He's at his own campaign headquarters at the offices of the Alameda County Deputy Sheriff's Association. Swalwell says he isn't running against Stark. He's running against his performance.
I saw a Congress that is gridlocked, is not working for folks, and I saw an incumbent who has largely been absent, has missed more votes than 80% of his colleagues, and has not lived in the congressional district. And I thought it's time for new energy and ideas.
But still, Eric Swalwell is a Democrat, just like Pete Stark. So in this case, people who are used to voting the party line have to actually consider the finer differences between the candidates, which Swalwell is more than happy to share.
One, he voted against the auto rescue plan. I would have voted in favor of that. That plan and what the president ultimately did saved Detroit. It saved General Motors. And we lost Newman. I don't blame that on Congressman Stark, but I do think he was asleep at the wheel. He has supported No Child Left Behind. And again, I mentioned to you, I would work to repeal it.
The Stark campaign didn't respond to our calls to answer those points, but the candidate does have support from stars in the Democratic Party. Pete Stark has been endorsed by Congresswomen Feinstein, Barbara Lee, and Boxer, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, and even President Obama. It makes him seem like a political Goliath to Eric Swalwell's David. But that doesn't faze the young Democrat.
While I love the president, I love Senator Feinstein, love Barbara Lee, I'm deeply honored to have the support of people who can vote for me. And I think that's the difference. We have the support on the ground from leaders who can vote and know the community. And that's what's going to make the difference for us.
That local support includes multiple East Bay mayors and city council members, police departments, the Alameda County Sheriff, and the whole Union City City Council. But he doesn't have the vote of constituent Lauren Harrington of Union City. She's going with the 39-year incumbent.
We're not unhappy with Pete, so we're not looking for anything new. What I really like about him is he's the only atheist in Congress, and that's why I'm voting for him.
However, in a race that pits Democrat versus Democrat, her own husband is going with the young challenger.
We have competing yard signs. He thinks we need new blood, and he actually went and heard Eric talk and was happy with what he heard and came home with the yard sign. So I had to go get a Pete Stark yard sign.
It can make for a crowded field, even when there's only one party in the race. If you live in the 15th District, who are you voting for and why? Call us at 415-264-7106 and leave us a message. That's 415-264-7106. And tune into KALW throughout the day after the election to find out the results as they come in. Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Mu, Leela Day, RTM's Kanahovs, Nina Morente, Mary Reese, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, RJ Sloan, Eva Sonsin, and Anna Sterling. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to New America Media and producer Odette Keeley, who coordinated the ethnic voter interviews we've been bringing you over the past 6 weeks. And thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. Find them online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio. You're listening to the Oakland band Tokyo Raid. They're the headliners on Saturday at the Stork Club in Oakland. Find all the details at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.